The title of this shiur is Tu Bishvat Halacha, Hashkafa, and History. The Torah tells us in Parshas Kedoshim that for the first 3 years, when any fruit that grows from a tree is orlas, in Parshas Kedoshim, Perek Yotes, Psukim Chav Gimel to Chav Hei. And the fourth year, the fruit from the tree must be in Yerushalayim. And the fifth year and on, you can freely eat the fruit from the tree. There's no mention of Tu Bishvat in the Torah. The Mishnah in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Perek Aleph Mishnah Aleph, describes four different Rosh Hashanahs throughout the year. And one of those, according to Beis Shabbai, is on the first of Shvat. It's the Rosh Hashanah for trees. And according to Beis Hillel, that's how we paskin, it's on the 15th of Shvat, Tu Bishvat. So that is, Tu Bishvat is the Rosh Hashanah for trees. Now, what's the significance? So there's a halachic significance in terms of Tu Bishvat. So number one is that if you plant a tree before Tu Bishvat, so once Tu Bishvat hits, it's year two. So you plant a tree 6 months before Tu Bishvat. Once Tu Bishvat hits, now it's year two. Another year, it's year three. And then obviously, during the fourth year, you would have to eat any fruit that grows in Yerushalayim. And then on the fifth year, you can eat it freely. So again, what's the cutoff point? When does it go from the fruit go from 1 year to the next? So that's Tu Bishvat. There's also halachic significance of Tu Bishvat in terms of separating Trumos and Masros. The Rabbim in Hilchos Trumos, Perakei Mishnah Halacha Yud Aleph, based on the Mishnayos of Maseches Trumos and Maser Sheni. So the halacha is you have to separate Trumos and Masros, you have to tithe your produce from the same year. So produce from, you have to separate produce from a certain year. What you separate has to go on that same year that the fruit blossomed. So in other words, you can't, for example, I can't take crops from 5 years ago and take some fruit from that and say, this fruit that I'm separating now goes on fruits that grow this year. No, it has to grow, what you separate has to cover the fruit from this, from the same year. Now, what's considered the same year? So that is Tu Bishvat is the cutoff point. From Tu Bishvat in 1 year to Tu Bishvat the second year. In the next year, that's all considered 1 year. You separate Trumos and Masros of fruit from fruit of the same year. Why is Tu Bishvat, why is that date selected? So the Gemara Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yud Aleph Aleph says, Ho v'yatsu rov gishmei shana, that the ground has been saturated with a lot of rain. In other words, by Tu Bishvat, so most of the rain from the rainy season has fallen. So what? So Rashi says that by Tu Bishvat, the ground has become saturated with the rains of the new year, causing the sap to start rising in trees, which means that the fruit can begin to blossom. Any fruit that blossoms before Tu Bishvat came from the rain before Rosh Hashanah. This Tosfos seems to take this view also. Doesn't mention sap, but that seems to takes the position also in Tosfos Daf Yud Aleph Aleph, basically that says that any fruit that grew, that blossomed before Tu Bishvat, it was nourished by rain before Rosh Hashanah. Now, the real cutoff point is Rosh Hashanah. If the fruit was nourished from rain of the previous year, then it's considered previous year fruit. If it was nourished from rain of the current year, then it's the current year fruit. So Tu Bishvat is the cutoff. If it blossoms after Tu Bishvat, so it's from rain of the new year. If it blossoms before, it's from the rain of the old year. And as I mentioned, it's similar by Orla. If you plant a fruit tree before Rosh Hashanah, then Rosh Hashanah is year one, and 2 years later is year three. But fruit that blossoms after Rosh Hashanah, before Shvat, are considered fruit from the previous year. So that is Tu Bishvat in terms of the halacha. But as we know, Tu Bishvat also has a status of a holiday, but it's not really mentioned at all in the Mishnah and the Gemara as a holiday. Menachem Zulai was one of the scholars who researched documents found in the Cairo Geniza at the end of the 19th century, and he found two piyutim, two liturgical poems, that were written by a Rabbi Yehuda Halevi Birbi Hillel, not the Rabbi Yehuda Halevi of the Sefer Kuzari fame, but this Rabbi Yehuda Halevi was a paitan, a liturgical poet who lived in the days of the Gaonim in Israel, probably in the 8th or 19th century, and he composed prayers for Tu Bishvat. He composed prayers for a year of blessing for all types of trees, and clearly the Gaonim viewed Tu Bishvat as some sort of holiday. But these documents were lost to us until they were found 800 years later at the Cairo Geniza. So where do we find a discussion after this of Tu Bishvat as a holiday? Now, we know that when it comes to a holiday, holiday is a time of happiness. Now it can manifest itself in happiness in terms of things you should do and things you shouldn't do. Happiness can be, you can have a halacha of happiness that you should, I don't know, eat meat or drink wine. But happiness can also be that if this is a day of happiness, we don't do sad things. We don't eulogize. We don't fast. And indeed, the Maharam Meir Rotenberg in Chelek Dalet Siman Hey writes that you don't fast. Let's say the community wants to establish a fast because it hadn't rained. So, you see, he writes that you shouldn't start the fast or have the fast take place on Tu Bishvat. Why? Because Lo Matzinu Tanis B'Rosh Hashanah Klal. We never fast on Rosh Hashanah at all. And the Mishnah says that there are Arba Rosh Hashanim Him. There are four different Rosh Hashanahs. And since they are written in the first Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, they're all written together, so they must be similar to each other. So just like on what we call Rosh Hashanah, the first day of Tishrei, there's no fasting. There's also no fasting on Tu Bishvat. So that's one of the earliest references of Rosh Hashanah as a holiday, how it manifests itself in halacha, that we don't start fasting for no rain. And the Shulchan Aruch discusses this in Or Chaim Siman Tav Kuf Ayin Bei Seif Gimel. Of course, there's also no tachnun. The Maharil records this practice of no tachnun. Trumas Adeshen quotes this practice. They lived in the 14th and 15th centuries, and it's quoted in the Ramah. Sorry, it's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch in Or Chaim Siman Kuf Lamed Aleph Seif Vav. No tachnun. So no fasting, no tachnun. But this idea of doing something positive to celebrate this holiday seems to have come a little bit later. Again, we had these references from these two Gaonim, two poems that were written by Gaonim in the 8th, 9th century, but it seems that the Rishonim didn't have access to these documents at all. They don't quote them at all. And we first read about specific positive things to do on Tu Bishvat, relating to new fruits, for example, in the 16th century. The first to mention this custom was a Rabbi Yisachar ben Mordechai ibn Susan. He lived in the 16th century, and his work, Tikkun Yisachar, is quoted in the Magen Avraham, Siman Kuf Lamed Aleph, Siv Katan Tezayin. He writes, V'nogim Ashkenazim laharbos b'minei peiros shel ilanos. The Ashkenazi have the custom to have a lot of different types of fruits from the tree, and he cites this Tikkun Yisachar, the source, the 16th century source. What about the fruit parties? What about Tu Bishvat Sudarim? So there is a 17th century note in a document in Worms, in Vermeisa, that they said Tachnun on Tu Bishvat. However, he said, this document says that on Tu Bishvat, Heba Yome de Mefagri Buhu Rabbanon, the Tu Bishvat was a day, along with Tu B'Av and Purim as well. These are days that there was no school. We prad Chamisha Asar, also like Ba'omer, Lamaladim V'Talmideyam. So there was no school. Bosin Yomim Badu Beis HaMedrash of Lamdim. So they canceled the Beis HaMedrash of the teachers. Vein and Arim Barm LaBeis Rabban Lilmod. the children don't come to learn, to the Rebbe's house to learn. If I'm a lamed, mechuyev laseis le'talmidim b'tziyasim b'sakneses b'shachar. So the kids all went to davening. The teacher had to give the students, when they left shul in the morning, b'chamisha aser v'lag ba'ober, yayin sraf v'lekach tov. Some kind of, I guess, kind of brandy and sweet honey cake. Mikisa from his pocket. Lo mikisa tamidim. Kikena minag. Not from the pocket of the students. This was the custom. Now, and also, you only find, by the way, a record of these celebrations in Ashkenazic communities and not in Sephardic communities. However, there is a major Tu B'Shvat revolution at the end of the 17th century. There is a sefer that was published entitled Sefer Chemdas Yamim, which contains a text and instructions for an elaborate Tu B'Shvat Seder. There is a meal first with something made of wheat and then olives, dates, and grapes. Then there's white wine, then there's figs, then pomegranate, then an esrog, then an apple, then white wine, then other foods. There's a total of 4 cups of wine. Perhaps it gets us thinking about the final redemption. Obviously, 4 cups of wine reminds us of Pesach, a day of Geula. Maybe we're thinking about the final redemption. And we should meditate upon a different permutation of God's name for each fruit that we eat, according to this Tu B'Shvat Seder. Now, what's fascinating about this work is that it was written anonymously. And in its early years, many people, including Rav Yaakov Emden, believed that the author was either Nathan of Gaza, the student of Shabsai Tzvi, or some other Sabbatian. And many rabbinic authorities accepted the premise that Chemdas Yomim is of Sabbatian origin. And this may be a reason why the Tu B'Shvat Seder is not observed in all circles. Or was not observed in all circles. Now, the author of this work was a Kabbalist by the name of Rabbi Yamin Halevi of Tzfat. And he couldn't have known about the Piyutim from the time of the Gaonim because they were lost to us until the 19th century. And nobody references them. Now, he was a student of the great Kabbalist, the Arizal, who never mentioned a Tu B'Shvat Seder. But Rabbi Yamin Halevi suggests that although the Arizal never observed a Tu B'Shvat, there are Kabbalistic reasons to observe it. One of the reasons is that we have a requirement to taste all of God's fruits, and it makes sense that Tu B'Shvat should be the designated day to do so. Additionally, he provides a number of psukim that one should recite that relate to fruit, Eretz Yisrael, or the final redemption, as mentioned. And some, again, as mentioned, some authorities question the legitimacy of the author of this work. But after this Sefer was written with this Tu B'Shvat Seder, Tu B'Shvat Sedarim sprung up in many communities. After this was published, many communities had their own unique customs. So again, in terms of the history of Tu B'Shvat as a holiday, you don't have anything in the Mishnah and the Gemara. You have some negative manifestations of Simcha in the times of the Rishonim. No fasting, no Tachnun. But you start to having the new fruits and the fruit parties and Tu B'Shvat Sedarim starting from the 17th century. Now, the significance of Tu B'Shvat as a holiday takes another turn with the establishment of agricultural settlements in Eretz Yisrael in the last decade of the 19th century. Because since that, this Rosh Hashanah for Ilanos, for trees, has acquired great significance, symbolizing the revival and redemption of the land by the conquest of the desert. Many of us are familiar with the famous quote that Mark Twain made when he visited Eretz Yisrael in 1867. He called it a desolate country whose soil is rich enough but is given over wholly to weeds, a silent, mournful expanse, a desolation. We never saw a human being on the whole route, hardly a tree or shrub anywhere, even the olive tree and the cactus, those fast friends of worthless soil, and almost deserted the country. You fast forward to the end of the 19th century in modern-day Israel, the first mass planting of trees on Tu B'Shvat is recorded to have been organized by Rav Zev Yaivitz in 1890, when he led a group of students from the Zichron Yaakov School, in which he served as principal, into the fields. Each student carried a sapling to be planted, and the procession and occasion was marked by festive and relevant communal singing. Rabbi Yaivitz joined the Hebrew Language Committee, famously founded by Eliezer ben Yehuda, and he helped to develop the modern Hebrew tongue. He coined a number of modern Hebrew words, including tarbut and kvish. Unlike other Zionists, Rabbi Yaivitz never abandoned his faith. He worked hard to ensure that Jews in Eretz Yisrael observed Torah law and lived like their ancestors. For this reason, he was a co-founder of the Mizrahi Religious Zionist Movement. 16 years later, in Elul of 1906, at a general meeting of the Hebrew Teachers Association in Yafo, a proposal was adopted to make Tu B'Shvat into an official day of tree planting. And there was a letter by Rav Kook in 1924 which praises this practice. So when I consider the history of Tu B'Shvat, how it evolved from simply being the beginning of the halachic fiscal year for Masros, to no tachnu, to special prayers, a Tu B'Shvat Seder, and tree planting, perhaps I wonder, are these customs truly reflective of and evolved from the original goal of Tu B'Shvat as stated in the Mishnah, as being a Rosh Hashanah for calculating Maaser? Is there any connection between these customs and the Mishnah, and specifically the modern custom of planting trees? How is that connected to Tu B'Shvat? Tu B'Shvat celebrates the beginning of the growth of the fruits on the trees, not the planting of the trees. And it seems to me that we need to ask a more basic question. Why is the date of calculating Masros, when the fruit begins to blossom, and not when the fruit ripens? And why are fruits judged not on Tu B'Shvat, but the Mishnah, the second Mishnah, Masech Rosh Hashanah, tells us that Batseres al Haperos, that the world is judged for fruit on Shavuos. We bring a korban, a sacrifice, because of this, because the fruit is judged in Shavuos. So why are fruits judged in Shavuos, and yet for Masros, the timing is not the fruit ripening, but the beginning of the growth of the fruit? And I think that the answer is that on Tu B'Shvat, we're trying to accomplish something different than on Shavuos. On Shavuos, we're ready to harvest the fruit. The fruit has ripened, so we pray and offer a sacrifice that this year's crop will be plentiful, we'll be able to eat from the fruit and prosper. That Shavuos is a time when we pray for our own material wealth, that we'll be successful in having an enormous harvest of fruit coming from the trees. But Tu B'Shvat is not focused on the fruit per se. It's focused on the fruit of Eretz Yisrael. The mitzvah of Masros highlights the uniqueness of the growth of the fruit in Eretz Yisrael. When we mark the day of Tu B'Shvat, the fruit is not really edible. It's just begun to grow. But this growth is a fulfillment of settling the land and developing the land, and it's a sign of God's hashgacha on the land, and even the sign of the redemption. The Navi in Yechezkel tells us that, or makes reference to this idea, when he says that in the final Geula, he says, "Va'atem horei Yisrael, an pechem uper yechem tisu la'ami Yisrael, and you, O mountains of Israel, shall yield your produce and bear your fruit for my people Israel." The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadiches Amud Aleph, cites Rabbi Rav Abba, who says that Ein Lecha Ketz Megula Mizeh, there's no greater sign of the end of our redemption when this prophecy of Yechezkel is being fulfilled. Rashi says, Kishetitein Eretz Yisrael Pirya Ba'in Yafa Oz Yikarav HaKetz. When the trees are blossoming, it's a clear sign of the redemption. The Vilna Gaon in Sefer Kol Torah writes that he yearns to come to Yerushalayim and plant a tree. Celebrating Tu B'Shvat, praying on Tu B'Shvat, eating fruits of Eretz Yisrael on Tu B'Shvat, and planting trees on Tu B'Shvat, it's not about the farmer who's praying for his livelihood. It's about the Jew who pours out his heart and prays for signs of the final redemption and celebrates signs of that redemption and does what he can to bring about the final redemption through tefillah, through a festive meal, and through planting trees. It's a day to connect with God, specifically through the beauty of Eretz Yisrael. And Tu B'Shvat is yet another example of a day in the Jewish calendar which has become more and more easy to celebrate now with the return of Jews to our homeland, to Eretz Yisrael, and the tremendous growth of Eretz Yisrael.